Welcome guys to the very first episode of the Where Do I Begin podcast. Today we're going to be talking about all things entanglement and things that potentially may be stopping you from investing. But before we get into all that, I feel it's only right for me to introduce myself. And so without further ado, let's get into it because we do have a lot to get to for this very first episode. So thank you guys for joining me. And let's get into it. So about me, I've actually always had an interest in financial markets. My background is in economics and investment management. And I have also worked in both insurance and retail banking, to name a few. I've also worked in events and hospitality. I've worked as an MUA. I currently have a food blog and provide a luxury private chef service available for pick up only because of COVID. So as you can see, I'm actually quite entrepreneurial. So when you think about the concept of me starting a podcast, it literally fits right into that. And some might call me a jack of all trades. And initially, I used to take that as a compliment until I understood or learned about the other half of the sentence, which was that a jack of all trades is a master of none. I'm like, that doesn't sound great. So instead, I like to think of myself as someone that has been graced and skilled to work in different industries at different seasons of my life. And that brings me really to the word purpose. I think very often than not, when we think about the word purpose, we think, oh, I only have one purpose. But I'm a strong believer in the idea that you can be called or purposed to do different things at various seasons of your life. So why did I decide to start this podcast? There are quite a few reasons. In my spare time, I tend to find myself analyzing stocks or explaining how the market works to family and friends who have shown an interest in investing. One of my favorite quotes is a quote by Paul Killick, and he talks about wealth being about freedom and how the financial choices we make today will ultimately determine the lives we live tomorrow. And that's always in the back of my mind anytime I'm thinking about my future, finances, or investing more specifically. But just to bring it, I guess, a bit closer to home, one of my key motivators really for why I started the podcast was because growing up, you know, my early childhood was actually in Nigeria. I was surrounded by a lot of family and friends who either had great businesses or were hardworking people, some who were also quite intellectually sound, and a few who actually came into money, but due to the mismanagement of that, unfortunately, they still weren't able to attain the financial freedom that they were ultimately after. And as a result, as a child, just, you know, seeing that and growing up, I always didn't understand how, you know, people could have all these great business ideas, but they just weren't progressing, or they didn't ultimately have the capital to scale up. And that's when it dawned on me, even though at the time I didn't have the language for it because I was a child, it dawned on me that as you know, I grew older and I reflected on my past, that, you know, when it comes to acquiring wealth, once you know how to acquire wealth, that's the easy part. But preserving that wealth actually requires education. It actually requires skill. And as a result, knowing that there's a lot of information out there, but there's also a lot of misinformation out there, as we've seen recently with the case of GameStop, I felt a really strong burden and pulling to sort of start this podcast and help people really understand what investing is and how to go about doing it, if that is something that they're interested in. Because I feel like with a lack of education, or should I say the right education, you could potentially invest quite a bit in the market and end up losing quite a bit as well. So my main goal really here is to, one, potentially encourage you to invest if that's something you're interested in, because generational wealth is something that I am passionate about and I feel like everybody should be too. but also more importantly, knowing how to preserve wealth when you do come into that. Finally, I feel like as a community, well, I belong to the Black community to be more specific. I feel like we do need to attain economic power for our individual families and for us as a group, because only then can we really make the changes that we essentially want to see. And only then can we be, can we have a seat at the tables that we're looking to get to. And I know some people are probably listening to this and they're going, well, if they won't give you a seat at the table, create your own. And I get that. But for you to create a seat at the table or create your own table, rather, you do need economic power to do that. So I'm hoping this podcast would be an educational experience. I'm hoping it would be informative. I'm hoping we'll have fun along the way. I'm hoping that it will break down pretty much all the mysteries surrounding investing and make it potentially easier to understand. And just a heads up, for this episode and the upcoming episodes, if you have any questions, please feel free to slide in my DMs or our DMs at Where Do I Begin Pod on Instagram, or feel free to email as well. All the details would be on the Instagram page, but I'll get to that much later on. Other things that I am passionate about, I am also passionate about seeing women excel in this industry. Again, I'll touch more on that at a later episode. I had my first public speaking engagement last year to a group of university students, and I absolutely loved it. I was essentially pretty much giving them the heads up of what it is like to try and build a career in finance. Obviously, the finance world is very huge. And just to give them a heads up on what to expect so they can feel better prepared, you know, once they start doing the applications. So I definitely do love pouring out into people in that way and equipping people with things that I have learned and from either by myself or from other people along the way, so that we can all be better together. I'm also very much passionate about behavioral finance and generational wealth, as I mentioned before. Things that I enjoy, I love talking to people. I am an ambivert, so I do have my moments where I just want to be alone and be an introvert. So it literally depends on the context for me. I enjoy networking with people in the industry as well, but I'm not just a nerd. I love to travel, even though we can't do that right now because of COVID. Some of my top qualities, not one, would be that I am hardworking, I'm emotionally intelligent, and I am assertive. I mean, I'm academically sound as well, if I must say so myself, but these are definitely some of my top traits that I am ultimately super proud of. So we're going to get into today's episode. But before I go further, I feel like I need to read out this disclaimer to protect myself and to protect you also. This disclaimer might be something that will potentially be repeated at every episode, so please do forgive me, but it's important for you guys to really listen to this and understand so we're all protected, because no one is about to sue me, okay? So the disclaimer goes like this. All the information presented or spoken about on this podcast is for educational and general information use only. This is not investment or financial advice. Therefore, any information discussed should not be interpreted as personalized investment advice. Before making an investment decision, please do your own research, verify information for accuracy, and speak to a financial advisor. Please be aware that liability for any investment decisions made entirely falls on you. Any brands, companies, or investment platforms referenced during the duration of the podcast and future episodes are for educational purposes. This podcast is not sponsored by any of the brands or companies mentioned. Any information or potential advice given by guests solely represents the opinion of the guests only and is independent of the Where Do I Begin podcast. So now for today's episode, as you can probably see from the title, it is when your entanglement with a savings account is stopping you from investing. So first things first, what is investing? Essentially, investing is making your money work for you. An industry definition by one of the godfathers of investing, who goes by the name of Benjamin Graham, along with David Dodd, the definition they've given is that an investment is an operation upon which, through thorough analysis, promises safety of principal and a satisfactory return. Operations not meeting these requirements are speculative. Now, that's not to say that speculative investments are not profitable. It just means that you cannot solely base an investment decision on speculation. Okay, so some of the key words to think about is thorough analysis. Principal basically just means the initial amount you put into a stock. So a stock basically is a company, for example. And a satisfactory return is we're all hoping to get more than what the initial amount was that we invest. So what entanglements or what things really stop you from investing? When you think about the word entanglement, I didn't just use it for clickbait purposes. Just think about things that may potentially have your money tied up. So the first thing I came up with is age. And that's because a lot of us are probably in our 20s or 30s, if you're listening to this podcast. So some of us are in a place where we're still trying to figure out our career path and trying to find stability when it comes to jobs. So as a result of that, investment or investing, although it may be something we strongly desire, we don't feel that's something that we are able to do right now. And there's no issue with that, you know. Once you get some stability, then I would still advise you invest, you start investing as soon as you can. You know, there's this saying that goes, the best time to invest was 10 years ago, the next best time was yesterday, and the next best time is today. So whenever you feel like you've achieved some level of stability when it comes to your finances, I would encourage you to start invest, because you can't really, and you shouldn't be really, investing with money that you don't have. That doesn't make sense. So that's the first, I guess, real issue. The second is the issue of debt. Now, this is a big one, because I have seen a lot of people on social media, and this is not me coming for anybody, by the way. It's just that I've seen this interesting view of social media, which basically a lot of people have said, if you have debt, you have no business investing. Your main goal should be paying off the debt. Now, I hear that. I really and truly hear that. But I think what we need to think about is, when we talk about debt, there are two types of debt. There's good debt and there's bad debt. When you have good debt, that should not stop you from investing. When you have bad debt, that should definitely be your first priority before you think about investing. So let's define what good debt is. A good debt is one that is a sensible investment in your financial future, e.g. your student loan paying for your degrees. That's a good debt, because ideally the hope is once you attain this degree, it will potentially increase your earning power. Obviously, we're in a pandemic right now, so that's probably not the case for most people. But outside of that, once things start picking up again, the idea of, you know, pursuing a degree so you can potentially increase your earning power in whatever industry you choose to work in. So essentially, you get a positive financial return from, I guess, getting a student loan, if that makes sense. So other examples of good debt is a mortgage, for example, or buying a car that you can actually afford, even if you put it on finance. Although some people argue that a car is a depreciating asset, but we're not here to talk about that today. Now, the reason why student loan specifically is good debt is because, and why that shouldn't stop you from investing, just because you have student loans, especially if you're working, is because at some point, you know, if you haven't paid it, I think it's either after 30 or 40 years or something like that, it gets cancelled and it doesn't, you know, affect your credit score or anything like that. Now, I'm not saying as a result, don't try and pay it off. What I am saying is that you can pay off, or you can, you know, make regular payments to your student loan to pay it off, but at the same time, invest. I don't think there should be a trade-off when it comes to that, because when you ultimately think about it, you can pay off all your debt and still be broke. And what you don't want to do is prioritize paying off all your debts, and then you look up in your 40s, 50s, and you have nothing left to your name except a pension. And, you know, if you're a Christian, you know, even the Bible talks about a good man or woman leaves an inheritance for their children. And I feel like that is what some of our counterparts have done. And that is why their children, you know, often have a bit of a head start in life. So for me personally, I am of the opinion that if you have good debt, you should not let that stop you from investing. However, if you have bad debt, which is basically debt that drains your wealth, i.e., you know, credit cards that you've used to purchase things that you don't need, or going on a luxury holiday that, you know, you can't afford, or maybe even buying a Rolly that you know well and good you can't afford just to do Instagram lifestyle. Again, I'm not coming for anybody, but I'm just saying these things to sort of, I guess, give you good examples of what debt is and the impacts it can potentially have on your finances. We all have debt. I have debt. So again, this is not me coming for anyone, but I'm just trying to I guess explain the different types of debt that's out there, and the ones you should be prioritizing paying off, and then the ones that you shouldn't let potentially stop you from investing. So I hope that makes sense. So all in all, when it comes to the issue of debt, I feel like you can invest whilst paying off debt, because debt in itself does not generate wealth. So as I mentioned earlier, you can pay off debt and still be broke. So I think it's really important to think about that. Paying off your debt doesn't make you rich. It doesn't build generational wealth. So I definitely don't think that should be your only priority. But if it's bad debt, as I mentioned, it makes better sense to pay it off first before you think about investing. Because quite often with bad debt as well, it often comes with high interest rates. So if all you're literally paying off is the interest on your debt, whatever money you could potentially be gaining from investing is pretty much a loss when you do the maths. So that's why I sort of suggest that, yes, it might be better to follow social media advice and pay off your bad debt first before you choose to invest. Okay. The other thing I guess is important to think about is the fact that investing is a long-term gain. I often see people again, especially when, you know, the stock price for certain stocks go up. Oh, you need to get in, time the market and get out. And that's not always good practice. because you can't always time the market successfully. And when you start, I guess, doing things like that, you're low-key moving away from investing and you're doing more of trading, which is not a bad thing either, but it's just important to highlight that there is a difference between trading and investing. And if you don't know what you're doing, you could potentially stand to lose a lot of money. But just to finish up on the whole debt point, one of my favorite lines is actually from a Jay-Z track called The Story of OJ, and he basically has a line in the song that says, "Don't look rich and die broke." So anytime you think of making an unnecessary spend, think about that line: don't look rich and die broke. And again, I'm not saying we shouldn't enjoy the pleasures of, you know, life. I'm just saying we should do that within reason. So, for example, we've been in a pandemic for almost a year and a half, or coming up to a year and a half. I'm sure once restrictions are lifted, people want to go on holiday. I personally feel that is within your rights, you know. But when you do go on holiday, maybe try and do it within your budget. So I hope that that makes sense. Okay, so the next thing that could potentially be stopping you from investing is this myth that all you need to do is save. Growing up in an African household, you know, save your money is something that I heard quite often. And whilst that is good advice, it's not the only advice. As I mentioned earlier, the same way, you know, paying off debt and investing at the same time is a good thing to do, it's the same way saving and investing is also a good thing to do. It shouldn't, again, be one or the other. It should be both. Because with saving as well, you could save, and you could save a lot of money. But again, it's not bringing in wealth for you. Does that make sense? So there's pretty much a cap on your savings when it comes to savings. Whereas when it comes to investing, the opportunities are endless. Your money is not doing anything for you a lot of the times when you just focus on just saving as opposed to saving and investing. And a good example of this is when you look at what the current interest rate is. I think it's about 0.1%. And depending on who you bank with and what type of savings account you hold, you know, the interest on your savings could range between 0.5% and 1.25%. So when you think about it, the yield or the return on whatever the initial amount it is that you put in your savings account is extremely low. And what is really interesting is that the money you're putting in the bank to save, quote unquote, is actually being invested, possibly in the stock market and in other things. So the bank is making a whole lot more money on your savings, but you're only making 0.1%, 0.5%. When you think about it, it doesn't make any sense. So as a result, it's important to save, but only for an emergency fund. Once you reach your emergency fund target, you can start to invest. Or if you are blessed and you have the capability to do both at the same time, you can build your emergency fund whilst also investing. And you can invest from as little as £50 to £100 a month, depending on which platforms you choose to use and depending on whether you decide that you want to purchase a whole stock or you want to buy fractional shares, for example, or you want to invest in a fund. Again, in future episodes, I'm going to expand more on these things. But basically, don't let savings be the reason why you don't invest. They're definitely useful, but only for emergency funds. And your emergency fund really should be roughly cover a 6-month period. Because again, with the pandemic, nobody saw it coming. Those that had savings probably didn't have huge changes to their lifestyles as a result of the pandemic. But those that didn't, you know, they probably felt it a bit more. So savings is definitely important, but it should only be used or seen as a buffer. And again, once you've built that emergency fund and you have that buffer, you essentially have the freedom to invest. Okay. The next thing that could potentially be stopping you from investing is fear. And I don't think this is one that is often touched on a lot. You know, sometimes people fear that it's risky, and it is. I'm not going to sit here and tell you investing is not risky. Also, because, you know, people don't understand the market, you know, that adds to the fear. And then there's also the fear of you could potentially lose all your money. And those are all valid things, I guess, to be cautious about. However, you can't let that stop you. You know why? A lot of things we do in life in general comes with risk. So if you're still doing those things, then why should you let fear stop you from doing one more thing, which is investing? Okay. The relationship you're in right now is probably a risk. You know, when you choose to be in a relationship with somebody, you know, you're choosing and hoping that, you know, they'll do right by you. You know, maybe you're gone forever if that's what you're after. But it's still a risk that you've chosen to take. To love somebody is a risk, but you still take it anyway. So the same attitude needs to be had when it comes to investing. Of course, you need to take calculated risks when it comes to investing, but your mindset should not be, it's too risky, so I'm not going to do it. Your mindset should be more so of, I know it comes with risk. Now, how can I manage or mitigate the risks associated with this particular investment? So the goal should not be to avoid risk altogether, especially if the risks are calculated. It should be to mitigate those risks. Again, I'm not saying go out there, be reckless, just put your money into anything, or even in everyday life, just be reckless and just, you know, take risks that don't make sense. Of course not. Make sure your risks are calculated and try and find ways to mitigate those risks ultimately. And another way to get around it, especially if you're quite fearful when it comes to investing, is to think about passive investing. So this would be investing in things like index funds. All this does is literally it tracks the market. So investing in index funds are basically funds that historically, you know, has been proven to do well, basically. So regardless of what's going on in the economy, you would always get a return. So if you don't know a lot about the market, you know, index funds, ETFs, which are exchange traded funds, which is basically a basket of stocks, those are things to consider to start investing in first, as opposed to buying individual stocks and then trying to manage it yourself on a retail platform. Again, in the upcoming episodes, I'm going to touch more on that. Another thing that might be stopping people from investing is low income, or them thinking that they need a lot of money to start. As I mentioned earlier, you can literally start from as little as £50 to £100. It literally just depends on what platforms you decide to use. And then I guess the final point when it comes to this is this whole idea of all you need is a pension. This should not be our goal, because there's stats out there that potentially say that your pension is not a lot to live on, you know, when that time comes. And one thing I think we also need to be aware of is that even our pensions are being invested in the stock market. So if you're at home and you're thinking, oh, I'm not an investor. No, you're an investor. You may not know it, but your pension is being invested in the stock market. And as a result, by default, you're an investor. You may not be an active investor. You may not be a qualified investor, since you're not the one managing your pensions necessarily directly. But you are an investor. And, you know, when it comes to private pensions specifically, if your company offers to set up a pension pot for you, that's not something anyone should ever opt out of. I know in our minds we think we're young, we have time, and we do, but we also don't. So if your employer offers you a defined benefit, I guess pension scheme, definitely opt in for that. And if it's a defined contribution, opt in for that as well. The difference between the two is that with the defined contributions, you can always add more than the percentage that they take from your salary to put into your pension pot. So basically, that's the difference between the two. So now I'm going to talk about, I guess, the breakdown when it comes to how much you should, set aside when it comes to savings, when it comes to investing, when it comes to your bills, essentials, that sort of stuff. Again, this is just a guide. Obviously, it will vary depending on your standard of living or your cost of living and even how much you're earning. So a guide, I guess, would be, you know, if you're a Christian, for example, you probably give to church. And if it's tithes or offerings, you know, that could potentially account for roughly about 10% of maybe your income. If you're not a Christian, you may want to give to charity or other causes. That could, again, account for roughly about 10% of your income. So you could sort of, you know, set time aside. You could sort of set some money aside for that. When it comes to building your emergency funds, which is also known as savings, you should be looking to save for roughly between 3 to 6 months or 6 months to a year. Again, that's your choice because it ultimately depends on how much you feel you will need to be able to survive if, i.e., you lose your job tomorrow, for example, you know, and how quickly you think you'd be able to get a new role. So that's why there's such a range, which is either build an emergency fund for 3 to 6 months to cover a 3 to 6 month period or to cover a 6 months to 1 year period. So ideally, you should be portioning at least 20% of your earnings to your emergency fund / savings. When it comes to your bills, that most likely would potentially take up 50% of your earnings. And then when it comes to investing, if you're in a two income household, i.e., let's say you're married, for example, you should be looking to potentially devote 30% of your income to investments. If you're in a single household, you need to be looking at potentially 5 to 10%, although I'm leaning more towards the 10%. But again, it literally all depends on what you're earning. And then the last 10%, it's literally on entertainment, whatever you want to do, you know, go on holiday, I don't know, whatever it is that interests you, whatever catches your fancy, you know, the last 10% is for that, because I feel like a lot of times there's a rhetoric when it comes to investing that make it sound as though that's all you should be doing, you shouldn't live life. That's not true. You can do all these things if you sort of follow the guideline I've just sort of set out. So why should you invest / what are the benefits of investing? It's very simple. You know, you're earning an additional income that you're potentially not having to work for because your money is doing the work for you. The great thing about investing as well is you can invest for short-term purposes and for long-term purposes. So short-term purposes would be things like weddings, for example, mortgages. And this is what I'm saying. A lot of us, or a lot of people, find themselves when it comes to, you know, getting married, you know, potentially having to borrow a loan to have their dream wedding. That's for those that are into big weddings. Again, I'm not against that. When I get married, I'm going to have a big wedding, okay? If it's a loan that you can afford to borrow. But had we had this education prior, if this was something that we knew, okay, was in our goals list, you know, we could have been investing potentially for a future wedding, you know, and I know that that might sound absurd, but it's something that could have been potentially beneficial had we known much earlier on. Short-term planning again, another example would be mortgages, for example, you know, saving up for a deposit. It shouldn't just be when we hit our mid-20s or, late 20s, that's when we're thinking, oh, I want to buy a house. Now you're having to figure out how you're going to sort out a deposit, and you're putting yourself under a lot of pressure. Again, lack of education, probably in the school curriculum system as well, has made things potentially difficult when it comes to buying a house. I mean, living in London, I live in London, is extremely expensive. When you're thinking about potentially getting a mortgage, you know, you really need to know that it's something you could potentially afford before you move, or you might find yourself having to move back home. So again, had we known, we could have potentially been investing, but it's not too late. You can still, you know, invest towards those things. The second one was long-term planning. An example of, I guess, long-term planning or benefit for investing is, education. You have other families who basically would invest for their kids pretty much from as soon as they're born. And then by the time it's time for them to pretty much go to uni, they're not having to borrow student loans because, you know, they've been pretty much investing from when they were born. And that could be even something as little as, I don't know, putting £10 in an account for them, you know. And then when it's reached this sizable amount of capital, then they could potentially, you know, put that in the stock market so it can, you know, work faster and they can get higher returns for their investments. And then another example of long-term planning would be obviously pensions, as I mentioned earlier, which most people are probably already doing if they opted in for the employers, you know, your employer setting up a pension pot for you. So the main, I guess, benefit really from investing is an additional income, you know, building generational wealth, living a legacy, and having your money, you know, work for you. We hear a lot of times about seven income streams and all that good stuff. And some people take that as, oh, I need to set up seven businesses. No. If you invest, that's one of them. If you have a main job, that's one of them. If you have a side hustle, that's already 3 out of 7, you know, sorted out. And, you know, if you manage your finances well enough, 3 streams of income might just be all right. It might just be all right if you know what you're doing. So I'm not here again to say 7 streams of income is not great. If you can afford it and you have the capability to do that, then kudos to you, more grease to your elbow. But if it's just 3, then make sure investing is definitely in one of those 3 streams of income. So I'm going to, I guess, suggest some potential platforms that you could invest in. Again, please do your research because some of these platforms may have commission, depending on how much your returns are or how often you're withdrawing from the platforms. So some good platforms that you can use are Vanguard, Trading 212, I know is a popular one. Hargreaves Lansdowne, although it is a little bit expensive on that one. You have Free Trade, you have Robinhood and Acorns, if I have any American listeners here. Acorns is particularly good if you're a fresh graduate. And then you have Fidelity as well. Another question I often get is, what companies should I invest in? I actually saw this question on Twitter and the person was essentially saying, oh, everybody's always saying we should invest, but nobody actually tells you how to do it or what companies you should invest in. And that's all I want. I just want somebody to give me the companies I should invest in. And I smiled because, one, I understood the frustration, but it was also, I guess, an opportunity for me to sort of explain to this individual that when it comes to investing, it's actually personal because it's very much dependent on your investment goals. So sometimes it's not a case of people don't necessarily want to help, but it's just not their place to tell you what to invest in, because it's based on your personal goals. Now, they can give you guidelines as to what they think you should invest in, and that's why you have financial advisors who could help, create or tailor portfolios to what your goals might be. So that's the main reason why, you know, people who have the knowledge when it comes to investing are not necessarily shoving companies or stocks down your throat. This is what you should invest in, that is what you should invest in, because if these companies, for example, if their morals are not something that you stand for, and it's something you find out later on, you're probably going to be put in a position to want to sell off, you know, those investments or stocks if you're managing it yourself or you have somebody managing it on your behalf. So it's really important, as I keep saying, to again do your own research. But just on a very, very like basic level, you know, you can start with investing in brands that you like, you know, brands that represent your personality, your morals, your ethics, or brands that you believe in their mission statement, you know, or what they stand for. And this is a good strategy. I know some people will be like, it's quite basic, but if you're new to the industry, to the market, I think this is a good strategy to have, because I feel like it would help you hold on to the stock when there's volatility in the market and there's, you know, wild price swings as we've seen in the recent weeks. So ultimately, yes, you can invest in whatever company you want, but you need to have a strategy. And if your strategy is I'm going to invest in I don't know, Nike or Adidas, because I it represents my personality. I love the fact that, you know, they source their materials ethically. If Nike or Adidas stock price crashes tomorrow, you're not going to go into a panic, you know, because you see potential. You stand with what they stand for. It will basically give you the conviction to hold on to the investment and potentially stop you from losing a whole bunch of money if you're investing, as opposed to if you were just investing emotionally. And that's the other thing I see people doing a lot. They basically just invest based on whether the stock price is high or low. That is not enough, because although most of the time the stock market will reflect all available information about a company's stock, it's not always accurate. It's really not always accurate. So you can't just invest based on whether the price went up today or the price went down today. If we revisit our definition, as I mentioned earlier, the key word is you need to thoroughly analyze, you know, a company before you choose to invest in them. Now, I'm aware that not everybody necessarily has the required knowledge to fully understand, I don't know, industry terms, or whatever the case is. But if you read shareholders' reports, they are a lot of times they're publicly available. You know, you can look deeper into the company financials. You can look into what is their core service, which service really brings them the most revenue. You know, what are their plans for the future, for example? You know, all that kind of information you will find in the shareholders report, which is publicly available, and then you can make a well-informed decision on which company to invest in as a result. And if you don't necessarily want to go through all that hassle, that's fine. You have companies that have funds that are pre-selected, you know, that would essentially manage your investments for you. Yes, at a cost, but if you don't want to be the one sifting through shareholders' reports, then that's a cost you have to be prepared to pay. And some of the cost is not necessarily something ridiculous. You just have to know literally where to get the best deals. And so long as you Google, you know, what this company stands on, environmental, social governance, and you can actively see that, you know, they didn't just put it on their website, but they're actually actively doing these things and pouring back into the community, then it's a go. It's literally a go. But if you are a retail investor and you prefer managing your investments yourself, then you definitely cannot make a decision just solely on whether the stock price is up today or down today. You know, you have to look a bit deeper into the company's financials to be able to do that. So I'm just going to give you guys, I guess, a head start. Another stock picking strategy is something called the bottom-up approach, which is where you look at what's going on in the individual company, then what's going on in the industry that company belongs to, then what's going on in the economy, you know, as a whole. Or you can do it top down. So you look at macroeconomic themes, you look at industry, you look at sector, then you look at the individual company. You know, you can do top down, bottom up. So to give you a head start, when we think about what's been going on over the past 2 years, obviously we're in a pandemic. So three things one can look at is, because we're in a pandemic, obviously the healthcare industry is being affected in a positive and in a negative way. So maybe invest in some healthcare stocks. Because of the pandemic, a lot of us have been working from home. So maybe invest in some digital transformation stocks, you know, stocks that potentially could optimize, you know, workflow for those of us that are working from home. Again, we're in a pandemic. A lot of the things we're doing outside of grocery shopping, and even some people still do their grocery shopping online, you know, a lot of things that we're purchasing online. So why not invest in companies that specialize in digital payments or e-commerce, for example? So those are things to think about as another stock picking strategy. When you're thinking about, okay, what company should I invest in? You can look at what's going on around you and then make a decision based on that. So that's me potentially giving you a head start. So when it comes to digital transformation, I guess, stocks, again, please do your research. I'm mentioning the stocks because they are stocks that I have researched based on a specific criteria, which I can't necessarily disclose. But again, you can do your research and have a look as to whether these stocks are stocks you potentially may want to invest in. So I'm going to suggest a few for each category. So for the healthcare industry, for the digital transformation industry, and for e-commerce and digital payments. So for digital transformation stocks, you can look at Akamai Tech. You can look at DocuSign. I think that's a famous one in the UK as well, where you potentially sign documents online. You can look at Citrix Systems, and then you can look at Five9 as well. For healthcare stocks, you can look at Quidel. The ticker for this stock is QDEL. And what Quidel does actually is they work in the molecular diagnostics area of medical technology. The healthcare stock sells tests that can detect viruses that lead to influenza, chickenpox, shingles, strep throat, among many others. Quidel actually also makes a test that can detect SARS-CoV-2, which is the virus that leads to COVID-19. So that's an example, for example. Wow, that's an example, for example, bear with me. That's an example of a stock within the healthcare industry that you could be interested in investing in. And those are things you need to look for. What do they do? What are their finances saying? How is that relevant to what's going on right now? So those are questions you need to ask yourself when you're thinking about, okay, what companies do I want to invest in, as well as what is their future potential, you know, when you look at the research and development side. Another healthcare stock one can look at is Veeva. The ticker for that is VEEV. Ticker, by the way, means just a code that you can use to search for the stock. And then for digital payments and e-commerce, you know, Amazon and PayPal, you know, are two suggestions, you know, that you can look into investing in. Now, I'm aware that Amazon is an extremely expensive stock to buy. PayPal, not so much. But again, guys, do your research. And I hope that has definitely given you a head start and some information as to how you can go about investing. So that will be all for today's episode. Thank you for listening. Please share, follow, comment, subscribe, all that good stuff. As I mentioned earlier, if you have any questions about anything said in this episode or future episodes, please send a DM on Instagram at where do I begin _ pod, or drop me an email at info.wheredoibeginpod@gmail.com. Again, thank you so much for joining me. I hope this has been very helpful. And I look forward to speaking with you on the next episode. Please do give us a follow, like, share. Take care. Bye.